if anybody looked at this agenda and said, oh, it's about parenting, my kids are grown, I'm not going to go, they made a big mistake. Okay? I know some people are traveling. And actually, we got so many kids here that, you know, they're over there, they're over there. But Beverly Parish is not only a homeschool expert, not only a parenting expert. What you're about to hear is leadership. Leadership at every level. And what you're about to learn are things that you can take back to your business, your family, because everything applies. And Beverly Parish is one of the finest people that I know. And in the inner circle, we look at the whole picture. It's my mentor, when he looked at what we're doing, he said, Howard, you've created a place of healing. It's holistic. It's for the spirit, the soul, the body. It's for the business, for the family, for the children. This is community. And let me also say this. Simon Sinek said that as a leader, your team members are somebody's son or daughter. And so really as a leader, you're a parent in a lot of ways. So be a loving parent is the same as be a phenomenal leader in my mind. So please welcome my friend Beverly Parish.
Well, hello. For those of you that I have not met, I am Beverly Parish. Chris and I live in the Houston, Texas area. We've been married for 39 years this week, something like that. I don't know, I can't remember. We have 7 kids. Our oldest is 37 and our youngest is 20. He just left our home sometime last year in COVID. I can't keep track of that either. And we have 6 boys and 1 girl. Our daughter Hannah is here. You may have met her. She's over there with Sarah and Jamie. She has special needs. She has Down syndrome. So she's our last one at home and will be home with us for, you know, the duration. I want to share with you today about creating a vision for your family legacy. What I like to do is inspire, equip, and encourage families to create a vision for the legacy that they leave. You understand that we're all going to leave our families. We're all going to leave a legacy. And so the question is that legacy going to be one that is formed from prayer and thoughtful intention and design? Or is that legacy going to merely be the result of happenstance and culture driving what happens with our families? And when we were young parents, we didn't know anything about anything. I'm one of 2 kids in a family. Chris is one of 2 kids in a family. We didn't even want children when we first got married. And obviously God changed our minds. But we found ourselves with this toddler and feeling really dissatisfied and unhappy and thinking, wow, if this is life for the next 18 years, I'm not sure that this is a good plan going forward. But we didn't know anything else. And I don't think we were alone then, and I don't think families who find themselves in that place now are alone. And I want to read you something. I recently found this study in a book called The Collapse of Parenting by Leonard Sachs. Anything Leonard Sachs writes is wonderful. I highly encourage him, encourage you to read him. But I want to read you this story because, as I said, I'm just being honest. I loved my child. Chris loved our child. We love our children. I'm not at all suggesting that you don't love your family. But the truth of the matter was, and I'll just say it, I didn't really enjoy his presence. And I thought, you know, I'm finding myself enduring and tolerating and resigning myself to a future that I was playing out of my head that did not inspire me. And I just thought, well, that's what everybody else is doing. You know, who's doing anything different? But we thought we were alone. But I want to read you the results of this study. In 2010, Daniel Kahneman, who apparently is a Nobel Prize winning economist, maybe you know him, I don't. He surveyed working women in the United States. And he was rating 15 things Number one was the thing in their life that they enjoyed the most, and number 15 was the thing in their life that they enjoyed the least. He speculated that men said roughly the same things too, but his study was just with working women. I want to read these to you. So the number one thing they enjoyed most in their life was intimate relations. Number two, socializing outside of work. Number three, supper, lunch, exercising, praying, socializing at work, watching TV at home, talking on the phone at home, napping, cooking, shopping, housework, coming in at number 14 out of 15, time with children. And it breaks my heart. The thing they liked least was working for pay, but kids came in only one above. And again, I don't believe that these women didn't love their children. I believe that they were unhappy with their experience with their kids at home. And I think a lot of us may have felt that way, do feel that way, and we just think there's nothing that we can do about it. And I just think, no. You know, for, let's see. This is a different kind of keyboard. For such a time as this, I think we need a vision for something for our families. I think we need a vision for the legacy that we're going to leave, not just leave it to chance. And I'm listening to the things we came on, we got here on Wednesday, and I'm listening to all these amazing workshops, and I'm thinking, dang, they're taking everything I'm going to talk about, you know. And yet, that's such a powerful thing, because the truths that we have learned that apply to our business apply to our families, and I just think we need to be intentional about our families. So we need a vision for what it is we want the legacy to be. The vision gives us direction. It tells us where we're going, helps us to make decisions. The vision provides boundaries. When we get out on the highway, those two lines on either side of our car keep us safe, and they let us know where we can go within those lines and still get in the direction that we want to go safely. And when we get off in the weeds like we do, like Dr. Leaf said earlier, when things get messy, and that happens, it's happened to us just recently, vision helps restore our focus. And you know all this to be true as it applies to your business, and I just want you to think, everything you've learned so far, apply it to your family and give yourself permission to believe that what can be true in your business, what can be true in your health, what can be true in your fitness, what can be true in your spiritual life, what can be true in your financial life, that you can make decisions and choices and put plans into place is true for your family as well. I'm not at all suggesting that this is a Pollyanna pie in the sky, everything's going to be perfect, and you'll never have a crossword or anything like that. I'm not suggesting that at all, but I am suggesting I think we have incredible control over the legacy that we leave. So, you know, if you've consulted with Howard before, that if you're going to talk finances, he's not going to talk to you. In fact, I think I know this to be true from our personal experience, until you have a KFP, a known financial position, because he's got nothing to offer you unless you know where you are. So I want to use KFP, but I want us to have a known family position. So if you were like us, when we started thinking about what we wanted in our family, we had no idea where to start, because everybody looked just like us. What else is there, you know? So we're going to evaluate where you are to determine this known family position. And I hope that in evaluating these areas in a similar way to the way you evaluate the wheel of priorities for your in your Ziegler planner, we're going to evaluate some different things. I hope it might be, if you don't already have in your mind what you might like as a family vision, I hope that evaluating and seeing, ooh, you know, some of this stuff I'm not satisfied with will give you ideas about what you do want. That was, frankly, we worked from a negative view. We don't like this. This is irritating. Let's not do that. And that helped us to create what we did want. So we want a known family position. So I want to ask you a favor, and I may even ask for a show of hands. I want your permission to be honest with you. And I want your commitment to be open to the possibility that what I'm suggesting could really happen. Because what I'm suggesting is that you and I have control over some of the things that go on in our families. And culture tells us quite the opposite. Culture tells you it's what you get, it's the luck of the draw. Toddlers pitch fits, teenagers are moody, husbands and wives, you know, are ornery with each other and fight, and all that is true. And all that is common. But is that what we want? Do we want to be common? Do we want our families to be known by, that's just common? So I want you to give yourselves permission to believe that it could be different. I want to challenge you to not make excuses. What is it Sherry told us? If you argue for your limitations, you get to keep them. I'm going to say if you argue for your excuses, you get to keep whatever you got. So I'm listening to this audiobook called Deliberate Discomfort. And I can't remember his last name. I'm so sorry. I highly recommend it. It's one of those people that you just want to be like when you grow up. He's a former Marine, a former Navy SEAL, a former Army Ranger, Green Beret. I think he has a master's degree. He served as a missionary. I mean, he's a real underachiever. You know, served as a missionary, wrote this book, consults with companies everywhere. Anyway, it's a fascinating book. And I want to put us in a place of deliberate discomfort, and I want to ask you to be open to that. He recounts the stories of the practices and the missions, and the thing that the recurring theme is these men at the height of their game, truly at the height of their game, after every practice, every mission, they sit down and they evaluate honestly where they are. Did I mess this up? Do I have the tools that I need? Do I need to get different tools? Do I have too many tools that encumber me? Do I need to learn new skills? Do I need to let old ideas go by the wayside? And he talks about it being really uncomfortable because people are speaking honestly into one another's lives to help them evaluate, to accomplish the mission. And I want to do that today, so I might make us a little bit uncomfortable. I won't ask for a show of hands if you'll allow me to do that. I'm just going to assume you're going to allow me to maybe make you a little uncomfortable. So these are the things we're going to evaluate, and I'm going to explain what I want you to think about in just a minute. Vision, relationships, quality of input, self-mastery, and seasons of life. So let me tell you what I mean by each one. Vision, number one. Do you have one? And I want you to rate yourself. We're just going to do this very simply, 1 to 5. 1 is not so great. 5 is really great. So I want you to evaluate in your head, where are we? Do we have a family vision? Maybe you do. Maybe it's not written down. Is it specific to all areas of your family's life? Or is it just, I want my kids to get a good education so they can get a good job, so they can get a nice house, so they'll have a good life, and they get married to a good person, and everybody's happy. I mean, I hope that you want more than that. And that's not a bad thing, but I hope you want more than that for your kids. So I want you to evaluate yourself 1 to 5. This vision, is it intentional? Have you put thought and prayer into it? Or are you just going on autopilot and you really haven't given it a lot of thought? So as we evaluate these other areas, pardon me, I hope I'll give you some, excuse me, I hope I'll give you some more things to think about that might play into your vision. So the first one is vision. Do you have one? So you just jot yourself a note where you feel you are, 1 to 5. 5 is I'm really knocking it out of the ballpark. 1 is I don't have one. Wow, what a concept to have one for my family. Okay, so the second thing is relationships. So I'm going to talk about 3 just basic relationships within our families. The husband and wife relationship, the relationship between parents and children, and the relationships between your children, sibling, and relationships. So think about characterizing, not one-off situations, but what is the character, what are your family relationships characterized by? So here's what I mean. When Ben was little, our family relationships between parent and child were characterized by a lot of frustration. He irritated me because he didn't do what I said. I'm sure I irritated him because I wouldn't let him do what he wanted to do. Chris and I were just learning, you know, navigating being newly married. And sometimes we didn't relate he didn't have any siblings at the time, but so sometimes we weren't relating to Ben like we wanted to. And then as we had more kids, there was this conflict between the kids. So I want you to think about what characterizes your home. Is your home characterized by angry words, by shouting, by condescension, by cutting remarks, snarky humor, and all that stuff? And the reason I say this is because when I'm out and about at the grocery store or whatever, I hear families talking to one another, and I'm astonished sometimes at the way they speak to one another. And I think, oh my goodness, if you do that in a public place, what must the flavor of your home be like? And the truth of the matter is, we learn such great information about respecting people's, well, identifying people's personalities, and I think I want to add something to that, and that is respecting their personalities. Respecting who they are and not trying to add a little bit of yours to their personality, you know, to balance them out, that kind of stuff. I think sometimes we tolerate rather than respect. So I want you to think about, do I have a positive, high regard for the different personalities in my family? One of the things I have written, and I thought, wow, this is such a God thing, because Howard mentioned it too, love languages. How are we doing speaking one another's love languages? For those of you who weren't here Wednesday, Howard talked about that. 5 love languages are words of affirmation, quality time, acts of service, physical touch, gifts. And so think about, do I know my family members' love language? And on your workshop handout, there are some lists of resources. If any of these things are unfamiliar to you, I recommend some of my favorite books that will flesh these topics out for you. But ask yourself, how are we doing speaking one another's love languages? What about gender differences? You know, culture is in an all-out assault against gender differences. And so in our homes, how are we doing supporting the different genders, the different gender needs in our family? So I want you to think about that. Rate yourself 1 to 5. How are we doing with the relationships in our family? Quality of input. I think Howard talked about this too. He might have even used these exact same words. What we put in here comes out here. You don't go to the gas station and put lemonade in your car and expect a positive outcome. So I want you to think about, what is the quality of the input that comes into your home? Media, music, movies, YouTube videos, social media, entertainment, outside activities, the quality of the outside activities that come into your home. And when you get a vision, you use that vision to determine what activities you allow inside your home. But you might not have that vision yet. But I want you to evaluate, are these things we're inviting into our life helping us in this direction, helping us move toward the vision we have for our family? Are they merely neutral things, which is not necessarily bad? Or are they actually taking us in a different direction? And if you guys are like us, we didn't really put that much thought into it because everybody has all their kids in all kinds of activities, and everybody talks to one another this way, and everybody watches The Office, and everybody, you know, is on TikTok and Instagram and blah, 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 and snarky, rah, rah, rah. And everybody's doing it. But again, I say that's common. Is that the best that we can do for our families? I even want to throw out 2 sacred cows for you to evaluate. And one is education. Is the educational environment in which you have your children moving you towards the vision that you have for your family? It's not a neutral, and it's really getting antagonistic to a lot of more traditional kind of family-friendly beliefs right now. We homeschooled our kids for 30 years, but I'm not a walking commercial for homeschooling. I think every family has to make their own choice. But wherever your kids are, be they little bitty or be they in higher education, you need to evaluate, is the education moving us in the direction that we want our family to be in? And the other one is your church environment. And I say this because our faith is really important to us. And so we go to church because it's really important to us. And we have found ourselves at certain times in our lives where church was not moving us, that church was not moving us toward the vision we had for our family. And it was hard to say, this is not moving us further down the field, you know? And sometimes we need to make changes. My point being, evaluate the quality of the input. Evaluate the quantity of the input coming into your family. You know, one of the ways we can compensate and kind of tolerate our families to fill our days with all these activities so we don't have to be around each other very much. And I know during COVID it was like, whoa, families are thinking, I don't even know these people, you know, and now I had to be with them all this time. Where are all my classes and activities and taekwondo and softball, and I need these kids, you know, out of the house. But we need to evaluate the activities and not just go on autopilot. So remember this, you become like who you hang around. The people you're hanging around at school, the people you're hanging around at your church, the people you're hanging around at all your kids' activities, your kids are becoming like who they hang around. Ultimately, that's you and I as parents, so we need to be the kind of people we want our kids to hang around with. So evaluate 1 to 5, the quality of the input coming into your home. Self-mastery. I felt like Dr. Leaf kind of hit on this a little bit. Some people might refer to this as self-control. I like the term mastery because I think of the goal is to master something, to be increasingly becoming more proficient at something. We'll never arrive. We will never reach perfection. But we ought to be growing in our mastery of things. And ultimately, we ought to be growing in our mastery of ourselves and our mastery of what we put in front of our face when it's time to eat and the quantity and the quality of the food that we eat. We ought to be developing mastery like a little child doesn't have any because they're little. We ought to be developing mastery of our behaviors, our manners, our attitudes, our emotions. My point being, we're not going to get very far working seriously towards vision if we are at the mercy of our flesh and its every whim. I just want to watch this ridiculous YouTube video. Well, I'll just watch this next one. I'll just watch this next one. And we lack the self-mastery to get up and go do something more profitable. Not that a YouTube video is bad, but if it's taking us away from something of greater value, it is a problem. I'm not suggesting, well, let me say this too. My comment earlier about little toddlers pitch fits and teenagers are moody and husbands and wives get cross with each other. I'm just going to propose that if in our place of business, when we come into contact with a customer or a coworker or any other kind of colleague and we get in a conflict with them, I'm going to bet that you and I can master ourselves and respond to them in a helpful, polite, mannerly, affirming, respectful way. And I think in a lot of cases we get home and we dump it on our families. And if we do that, if you and I can control ourselves with our customers, then we can control ourselves. And if we get home and dump it on the people that we love more than anybody on the planet, you and I lack self-mastery. That's just the way it is. And again, I'm not suggesting that we've arrived. I'm suggesting, am I working towards that? Or have I adopted the attitude that, they love me anyway, I can just let it go? Why would we do that? Why would we treat our family that way? Why would we do that? I'm not suggesting that we pretend. You know, Dr. Leaf talked about what happens when we squash the mess, we don't deal with the mess. I'm not at all suggesting that you don't acknowledge your true feelings, that you don't acknowledge sadness and all that kind of stuff. I am saying that we know how to respond in healthy, mature ways. Because we do it all day long with customers and colleagues and people that we need to like us. And I'm suggesting that we use those same skills with our families and teach our children in the process what it looks like for mom or dad to come home and say, you know what, I had a really difficult day. Can I just have 10 minutes? I'm just going to go stick my head in the shower just for 10 minutes. Just wash it all away, and then I'll be back with you. What a wonderful gift we give our kids to acknowledge that, yes, you have bad days. Yes, you have crummy feelings. And I don't want to, you know, kick the dog as I walk in the door. I want to go deal with this in a healthy way, and then I want to bring my best to you. So evaluate yourself where you are in this self-mastery. And I want to suggest some words, some areas that you might think about. It's called executive control. Where am I here? Yeah. I want you to think about some of these traits, because they might be traits that you want to work on as a family. So executive control is kind of an older term, but it's a series of qualities that the experts find helps people be successful in life. And they're these kinds of qualities: initiation, flexibility, attention, organization, planning, self-awareness. Did we just hear an amazing workshop on self-awareness? Confidence to learn, managing emotions. These are kind of things that I'm going to suggest are really good things to equip our kids with to send them out to be successful in the world. So just throwing that out there. So evaluate yourself 1 to 5 on your level of self-mastery. And seasons of life. So I'm going to, I forget who talked about this. Dr. Rome talked about this. Stages of life, he called them. I'm going to separate life into 3 seasons. And I'm going to suggest that the right thing at the wrong time is the wrong thing. And this is something that we need to evaluate, I feel like, in our families, where we are. Because there's a certain season in life where we have a tendency to way overload ourselves with activities that are really not appropriate. So I'm just going to simplify. We're going to talk 3 seasons of life. First season is your season of preparation. When you're a little kid to maybe 20s, it's your education phase of school, or learning basic skills, learning soft skills at home, those kinds of things. That's the season of preparation. You really don't have any responsibilities other than yourself and preparing yourself to be an adult and be, you know, able to support a family and care for a family. So the next season I want to call building or ramping up. This is the busy season. This is you're building your business, you're building your resume, you're building your family, marrying, having kids. You're building. You might even be building towers, you know, the monument to me. I'm building my towers. I want everybody to be impressed with me. This is busy, busy, busy time. And then the last season is, I want to call the season of influence, or the season of winding down. You've built your towers. You know who you are. I'm not saying this is retirement season. This is the season in life where you have gained experience, wisdom, maturity. You've weathered trials in life, hopefully well. Hopefully you haven't been a static character in your own life. You've been dynamic and grown. And I mean, in a crowd like this, I think that's probably the case. But in my mind, this is the season that offers us the freedom to serve those in our community, to influence others, to be generous with our time, with our money, with our talents. And not that young people can't have wisdom and young people can't serve. And I'm not saying that. I'm just saying there's a level of freedom and a level of efficiency. You know, when you get to be older and you don't have the physical ability that you once had, you learn how to be more efficient with things. And so there's just this place of, this is like the statesmen, the city fathers, the elders, this season of winding down. I'm not talking about retirement. Did I say that? I'm not talking about retirement. I'm not talking about the season of me focus, all right? So what I mean by evaluate the season in life, if I am in this ramping up stage, this building stage, I'm probably going to need to be careful not to say, yes, I'll volunteer to coach my child's basketball team. Yes, I'll volunteer to teach this Sunday school class. Yes, I'll volunteer to lead summer camp. Yes, I'll volunteer to do that. Yes, I'll work 80 hours a week. Yes, I'll, yes, 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 yes. And yet that's what culture tells us to do. And I think we need to learn the art of saying, that's such a great idea, but I don't think I can do it right now. I am so fortunate to be married to Chris, because he's the, like, the preeminent one. He'd say no, and everybody would go, oh, okay, you know. They'd ask us to do something, and Chris would say, no, I'm sorry. Well, okay. And we learned quickly that the bigger your explanation, that just invites conversation. So he'd just say, no, I'm sorry, we can't do that. And we learned over time that it allowed us to say no to something good, to say yes to something better. And almost all of our life, we were on the outside. We were the weirdos. We weren't, you know, very giving of our time. But we were like, our primary responsibility on this planet is this family unit and the safety and health and well-being of this family unit. It is not whether this kid's basketball team gets to the championships. Now, we all have to decide for ourselves what it is that we value. So I want you to evaluate, how am I doing in each season of life, all right? And be prepared to say no a little later. So what I want to do now is give you just a few minutes to brainstorm about what your vision might be. Take some of the things we've evaluated, maybe some things you're already doing, some things that are near and dear to your heart, and I want you to think about, where is it I want my family to go? And think beyond good education, good job, good money, good house, good marriage. I mean, think beyond that. What is it I want? If someone were going to write an encyclopedia entry about the Parrish family, what do I want it to say? What legacy do I want to leave? And so I just want you to just, you know, mind mapping, you put a circle in the middle, you write your name, and then off to the sides, you just write thoughts. So the rules of mind mapping are no editing, no censoring yourself. If you're here with your spouse, don't talk to your spouse right now. Number one, you'll distract those people around you. And number two, just make it yours for right now. And then later, when you have some time, share your thoughts with one another. And while I'm here, my expectation is that this will just pique your thinking, just get you started in your thinking. We were 10 years into our marriage before we came up with family goals, and it took us a couple of years to even articulate what we wanted, because like I said, we didn't know. Everybody's family looked just like ours, so we didn't know. So just brainstorm for a few minutes, and I'm going to be quiet. Here's some questions to help you think. What is the good life to me? What does it require? If I could have anything in my family, and I'm talking about being, not having stuff, if I could have any kind of relationships in my family, any kind of interactions, what would it be? So I'm going to give you a few moments, and I'll be quiet. Okay, I'm going to give you about 10 more seconds. So it is my prayer that you guys will go home and think about the things that we have talked about, and think about your unique family. What has God called you guys to do to influence your little pea patch in the world? I mean, think about it. What if we all just effectively influenced our little pea patch? Instead of trying to, you know, fly across the globe to minister, there's nothing wrong with that. But wow, what if we just influenced our little pea patch? What would this world look like? So this is a picture. I forgot to bring our real thing because I wish it were bigger. I couldn't figure out how to make it big enough for you to see the typos. That's how old it is. But these are our family goals that we made in 1992. So they've hung on our wall for almost 30 years, and they have provided us direction, they have provided us boundaries, and they have restored our focus when we've gotten off in the weeds, and we have gotten off in the weeds. And I want to read them to you, not because they're so great and wonderful and we are profound or anything, but I would love to have had someone read me their family goals, because I think I would have thought, well, no, I hadn't thought of that. So I want to read them to you. And let me just say this disclaimer. We never revised them, and I don't recommend that. We never revised them. And so but they kind of still fit, even though we didn't revise them over the years. And we only now are thinking, now that we're in a completely different stage in life, that we are thinking about revising them. And I don't know, it'll be interesting. But I want to read them to you. Or y'all can squint and see that. Okay. To know Christ and make Him known. To develop a true servant's heart. Create a self-sufficient family business. Live debt-free. Maintain a spirit of peace in the home. Practice hospitality, be our children's heroes, and then we had a section for homeschooling, but really it's just about character, and to develop the character traits of dependability, joyfulness, trustworthiness, diligence, patience, obedience, wisdom, honesty, self-control, tolerance, initiative, forgiveness, and love, to develop integrity, to be a person of our word and to live by godly standards, to pursue excellence in education, and to develop an appreciation for the arts and sciences. And we just bumbled through life and as best we could filtered our choices through this vision, and it's a remarkable thing that can happen. So what comes next for you guys? Go home, pray, talk, brainstorm some more, evaluate some more, make a plan, gather the tools to implement that plan. It may be books. We read lots and lots of books. As I said, we didn't know. What do you do? Expect obstacles. Expect to have other people think, who are you? What makes you think your family can be different? We didn't share our goals with a lot of people. I mean, normally you want to share your goals with people who will hold you accountable. I think this is probably a safe place to do that. We didn't have this. But inviting people to participate in your life with you is an uncomfortable thing that I recommend you deliberately choose. So let me leave you with this. Don't settle. Don't tolerate. Don't resign yourself to mediocrity. Level up your family. Dream big. Dream big, phenomenal families. And I believe we can change this place one family at a time. And I hope that you'll join me. Thank you.
Okay.
Does anyone have any questions? How many kids did you say you had?
Seven.
I have a question. Wow. That seems like a lot. I'm the oldest of five. Uh-huh. So how old was your son? Your firstborn uh-huh. was a son. How old was your son before you guys instituted the family values?
Four. Ben was four, because Luke was... No, Ben was about six, I think. Yeah, Ben was about six. Can someone do the math for me? We wrote the goals in 92. He was born in 84. Quick! Publicly schooled eight. Thank you. So they were like eight, six, four, and I don't know. I think we just had three at the time.
You got the vision thing for
Yeah.
So I recall you sharing the story of seeing the other family. Would you mind sharing that story?
Oh, yeah.
Because that was awesome.
So we went to this little church at the time. I'm thinking this is the story you're talking about. We went to this itty-bitty church at the time when we had this toddler that we really weren't too crazy about. And there was another family there, and they had about five kids, and their children were older than Ben. And it was this remarkable thing. They sat together. We were in this one-room schoolhouse church. And so the kids were with us all, and the kids sat with their parents, and they were hugging on their parents and loving on the parents, and nobody was pitching a fit, nobody was crying, parents, kids, neither one. Everybody was just, it was like they enjoyed one another, and we thought, what kind of magic is this? Get me some of that. And I'm so grateful that we recognized we didn't know anything. And so I said to her, your family is very different from ours, and what did you do? And she said, well, I read this book and I did what it said. So, okay, so she told me the book. Now, people have asked me the title of this book, and I'll get to that in just 1 second. But the book was about training your children, teaching them to behave, teaching them to be pleasant. In the same way, our parents probably taught us, you should chew with your mouth closed, you should put a napkin in your lap, you should, you know, be quiet if someone else is talking. Nowadays, not so much. There's sort of this cultural wisdom of, no, you just let them be. And they, you know, if they just understand why, they'll rise to the occasion. Well, I don't believe that because I think we have a sin nature, and that's just what we've seen borne out, you know, as in my own life. I see I don't always make the right choices. My kids don't make the right choices. Anyway, we read the book. We put into practice the principles to teach our children things proactively instead of reacting to everything they did. We proactively taught them to be delightful companions. And that was huge in our ability to enjoy them. You know, they could please us. It's just like your employees. You train your employees so they can please you, so they can do their job, so they can succeed. And it's the same premise with our kids. As we train our children so they can please us, so that other people want to be around them, so they can succeed and make people happy, and we don't scowl at them and frown. Anyway, so that book is very old, and the language in it is off-putting, and so I'm working on a book. That's my second book. I'm working on a parenting book. Is that the one you wanted to hear?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I thought that was pretty great, because we've already heard a couple times throughout the conference that people are always watching. And so what an amazing thing. Not only did you already have your family in church, so you were somewhere where you could see something you wanted to emulate, but there was another family that had already gone a little bit further down the road, and isn't that what we're all about? You know, being a good example. Does anyone else have a question for Beverly or Chris? Okay.
Me or him?
Oh, how did you go from wanting no kids at all to seven of them?
Well, so actually, the bigger question is how we went from one to seven. You know, you can imagine you had, okay, let's just try this kid thing out. So that's kind of what we did. We just tried out the first one. We're like, wonder what having kids is like. But actually, God had been working on our hearts. I had wanted to be a career woman and break the glass ceiling and all that, and then God just worked on our hearts and wanted to have a family. But The greater story, is, which is a testament to what Sherry just said and to what we saw, was we made those changes in teaching our son to be a person that we enjoyed, and then we thought, let's do this again. And let's do
the lady in the book.
Yes, because we were able to have a child whose presence we enjoyed and didn't just endure. Because up until that point, we had been enduring tantrums and pouting and, you know, tiptoeing around him not to set him off. And so
the reality was I looked at our son Ben and I thought, we're done. This is what being a dad is about. I'm out. I'm done. No more.
That hurts just to hear that, right?
Yeah.
And just a little extra education, submitting yourself to the fact that maybe you don't know everything, and now you get the blessing of a wonderful family, and you have your own team, basically.
Mm-hmm. I had a gang.
Yeah, you got
a gang.
I had a gang.
Yeah,
that's a great question. Okay.
Oh.
So
simple question. How's Ben now?
He's well-adjusted. He doesn't need counseling. So he's our oldest. He's 37. He has three kids and one on the way. And they are implementing some of the same principles that we did with him. But it doesn't look like us. Their family doesn't look like ours. We don't agree with everything they do, you know. But he's doing well. And we have another one of our sons and his wife here with Hannah. They were kind of, you know, helping her navigate while we're here. And I see the proof in the pudding. And again, all we did was just implement the principles that we learned. There's nothing spectacular about me and Chris.
Okay, last question. Well, that kind of answered my question, but since the purpose of the presentation was to help us, guide us to a path of leaving a legacy, right? Mm-hmm. So you have seven children now that is going to pass along this legacy. Mm-hmm. How is that going?
Well, and again, not perfect. Don't hear me saying, ooh, y'all be like me. That's not what I'm saying, but I see that they see the positive benefit. In fact, Ben, they have goals, written goals on their wall, a mind map. I see that it works. The principles work. I mean, that's what I'm telling you. It's the same principles Howard and the people he brings in to talk to us teach us. You just do it.
Awesome. Okay, let's give Beverly one more big round of applause. Thank you.